This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
To keep you in suspense.
Tired of the everyday grind.
Night transmissions. Hello, this is Gary Clinton with episode number 92 of Night Transmissions. I'm not going to waste a lot of your time yammering on right now. Let's get right into this. The first show tonight is an episode of Murder by Experts from December the 26th of 1949. The Case of the Missing Mind. The episode today opens up what it's a fairly common scenario. You see, there's this guy in a nut house who is addressing you and me directly and going on at some length trying to convince us and the authorities, of course, that he doesn't belong there. He freely admits that he belongs in jail for the crime of murder, but he is definitely not crazy. Just because the cops can't find that body, just because they can't find that guy in the funny hat named Aladdin, and because they're also having trouble finding that bodacious dame, that don't mean he's crazy. And how about that wish that Aladdin granted him? Do they think that that money is an illusion too?
Murder by Experts. The Mutual Broadcasting System presents Murder by Experts with your host and narrator, Mr. John Dixon Carr, whose books have been translated into 17 languages and have sold over 10 million copies, and author of the recently published detective novel, Below Suspicion.
Good evening. This is John Dixon Carr. Each week at this time, Murder by Experts brings you a story of crime and mystery which has been chosen for your approval by one of the world's leading detective story writers. Tonight, our guest expert is the noted mystery novelist, Craig Rice. In keeping with the spirit of the holiday season, Miss Rice, herself a witty and humorous writer, has selected a hilarious and suspenseful comedy mystery by Joseph Russell. And now we present Carl Eastman in The Case of the Missing Mind.
Let me out! You hear me, someone? Open this door and let me out!
You again, Mr. Andrews?
Doc!
Aren't we the troublesome patients?
Oh, Doc, you've got to believe me. It's all a mistake, a terrible mistake. You see, Doc? What's your angle, huh? I tell everybody the truth, the honest truth. So I'm a lunatic? What am I doing in a nut house?
Now look, our nice cousins are coming to visit, all the way from Two Forks. So let's be a good boy and watch our excitement curve, hmm?
Good boy, huh? Just wait till they show up. I'll tell them the way I got shanghaied here. They'll sue you for a million. They'll sue everybody.
Meanwhile, if your hallucinations persist, those fantastic tales, that alleged man you murdered...
But it was all real, I say. You got cotton in your ears.
All that abracadabra, Aladdin and the princess, Alibaba.
There was no Alibaba. I never said anything about Alibaba, just Aladdin and the princess. I can't help it if nobody believes me. It's true every word.
Now calm down there, or I'll be forced to put you in a straitjacket again. Now, we wouldn't like that at all, would we? Of course not. Pleasant dreams, Mr. Andrews. And remember, this is not the Arabian Nights.
No, all this can't be happening to me. Not me, Kenny Andrews. Everybody's known me before. I always know the right time. But I tell this story, they look at me queer. So it does sound screwy. So it's my fault? My golly, the thing transpired, I swear it. Listen to me, someone, listen! All right. Only 2 weeks ago, everything's normal, see? Like always, I'm doing the best I can with an angle. Only the best wasn't so hot the last few months. I've been up to cook the horses with dogs. My one unhocked suit was all ripped and torn by a certain Broadway bookie. That is important. Keep your eye on that suit. It was absolutely from hunger, sitting in the lobby of a cheap hotel in the 40s, when lo, this strange-looking character walks into my life.
Good morning, friend. Do you ever dream?
Just like that, he began, the strange-looking guy with the purple hat.
Do you ever dream, my friend?
I'd noticed this character before, shadowing me for days. On Times Square, I button my shoe. How do you do? There he is. I lose him in Schubert Alley, and he's the man right behind me when I'm putting a slug in the automat. And now here's Mr. Queer sitting beside me. Do I ever dream, he wants to know.
What is it you dream when you dream, my friend? I'm interested in wish fulfillment.
Say, listen, pal, are you for real? What's the idea of telling me anyway? Go take a long drop.
I'd like a word with you. You see, Mr. Andrews,
how'd you know my name?
I am a mystic, sir. I know all.
Oh, yeah? Maybe you know where I was born.
Two Forks. And now about your dreams, sir.
Say, who are you, anyway?
Oh, call me Aladdin.
Huh? Caught you kidding. Aladdin?
Yes. Would you like to try my magic lamp?
The guy is strictly from a nightmare, I figure. But let him talk. Look who's selling who to Brooklyn Bridge.
Answer, friend. You begin to rub my lamp the wrong way.
Now look at Mr. Aladdin. Suppose you scramble.
Please,
for...
fellow. Put up your hands. Reach for the moon.
Suddenly, the crazy little guy had me covered. With a little green gun.
Reach!
Hey, what is this? Stop,
you fool! To throw away good fortune when it seeks you out.
For the last time, sir, what is it you dream when you dream? The theme that keeps returning. Your heart's desire.
Like a nightmare. Watch your step, Kenny, I says to myself. You're dealing strictly with a query. Humor him or you're a dead pigeon. Oh, okay, sure, bud, I get you now. I always dreamed that somebody suddenly handed me 50 grand and a beautiful princess.
Ashkenazi!
My gosh, I hardly get it out of my mouth when it happened. You got to believe me, you got to, I tell you. This weird character in the purple hat, he whips out a huge envelope, he counts out 50 $1,000 bills, he hands them over to me, he shouts,
"The princess, my friend, will come later."
And he disappears out of the hotel. On my honor, on my mother's grave. That's the way it all started. I warned you my story, it sounded like a hophead's fantasy. I don't blame anyone looking at me sideways. I even examined my own head listening to me tell it. Such things don't just happen. A strange character in a purple hat, a green gun, and there it is. 50 grand! First, I don't believe my eyes. A guy like me, sharp, knows what time it is, strictly from Missouri. Still, them greenbacks look like the real McCoy. I stumbled over to the bank on the corner and up to a bank teller. I had to find out. Would you kindly mind breaking this bill for me like a good fella?
Well, let's...
The guy stared at the bill. Stared and stared, and then at me, suspicious.
Say.
Goodbye, Kenny Andrews. 10-year stretch.
$1,000 bill? Well,
He's casing it, but good. Easy, Kenny. Keep that heart still. Keep that heart still. Keep that heart still. Here it comes.
Yes, I... you know, we don't get these very often at this branch, and... how would you like to have your change, sir?
Clean. It was clean. 50,000 cabbages. A minute ago, I couldn't crash an eating stand, and now I'm king. My head spun round and round. I nearly passed out. Next thing I know, I'm spread out on a bed, back in my crummy hotel room. I feel in my shirt. It's still there. I count the bills again. All there. Passports to heaven. Hold on to that green. Hold on. All the money in the world and the world at your feet. First, buy a new suit. Don't answer. Get rid of these rags. The suite at the Waldorf. Ignore it. You're not here. Don't talk. It's yours. Guy in a purple hat, he came over to you. So it's magic. So what? I heard of such a thing. I read of such a thing. You're such a wise guy. Maybe I'm dreaming. No. No, not that. No. No, please. The one time in my life.
Hello?
It is real, my friend.
Oh, Mr. Aladdin?
You are not dreaming.
Oh, wonderful.
You are thinking of buying a new suit.
I am? I am.
You are not to do so. This is the only condition. You must always wear that suit. Disobey and the penalty is death. You are being watched. Remember. But everything else on heaven and earth is now yours for the asking. Happy joys, my friend.
You see? This gets schoolier and schoolier. But Aladdin's my boy, see? No questions asked. Who cares about front when you're healed with 50 G's? Clothes make the tin horn, but when you're a prince... That's how all my troubles began and headed me for this joint. When I can't resist anymore and go and tell the strange events to the boys along Broadway, they give me the quick rusheroo. It was unnatural. Am I dreaming, I says to myself? All right, if I am, I'm going to get rid of the silly sequence. The rags must go. I enter a ritzy talk shop. My good man?
Yes?
I was just torn to shreds on the stock exchange. You know, the hoily-boily.
Ah, I see, sir.
Yeah, you know the bulls?
I understand, sir. A new suit.
Yeah, I want to order about a dozen, and I want them out of this world. Something with a little dash supreme.
Yes, sir. Well, now, if you'd like to consider these numbers here...
But just then, my eye caught something looking in at me through the window. It was another eye, and it had a mad stare. And over it was a purple hat, and the pocket was aiming at me against the window. And without seeing it at all, I knew it was a little green gun.
These charming summer worsted, sir?
Look, pal, what are you showing me suits for? Who said suits? I said overcoats.
You said overcoats?
With a fur collar.
A fur collar? In July? Are you mad, sir?
Why not? If I gotta wear a coat to cover my past, I might as well have a fur collar. I always visioned me in one, but only in my wildest dreams. So, next, with a lot of haberdashery and gloves and this and that and a walking cane, I'm ready for anything. I'm out to live, see? Come what may. Even a dog catcher. That night in Manhattan finds me slumming at a private table in a midnight casino. The classiest spot in town, where before I could never even afford the bar.
You order, monsieur.
I already had a few quickies all over the stem. By now, I am a god. Champagne, Charlie, and a bottle for every lady in a joint whose escort can claim a purple hat. All eyes were upon me with admiration, including the most gorgeous little number at the very next table.
Beg pardon, monsieur.
It's the waiter smiling at me, very polite.
You forgot to check your coat at the door, monsieur. It is a rule of the establishment.
Oh, yeah, we'll see about this. Call a head waiter.
I am the head waiter.
Oh, yeah, huh? Go drop dead.
Gentlemen, please.
It's that luscious brunette with the creamy shoulders sitting alone at the next table.
Pierre, your manners. You disappoint me.
But he's wearing an overcoat.
Silence! Why do you not take this gentleman's order?
But it is a rule of the house.
Rules are for the riffraff. Can you not see he is perhaps an eccentric millionaire? But he is moreover to be my guest.
Oh, so, princess. In that case, princess, a thousand pardons, your imperial highness.
Go ahead, say it. Tweet, tweet. Kenny Andrews got the DTs. All right, don't swallow it then. But will someone please solve it for me?
I am lonesome, young man. Won't you join my table?
So this is the princess I was foretold. We made it a twosome, this royal doll and me. We killed three bottles, never taking our eyes off each other. Each was too entranced. Now what are we doing? We're sailing along 57 toward Park Avenue. Her head on my shoulders.
Oh, can you shut?
In a sky blue limousine, driven by a little midget. You heard me, a little midget.
Be kind to me, babushka.
She is a Russian, it seems. Princess Julie, from a branch without the heads cut. And she gives off like a rose.
Promise you will be very kind.
Where are we going, princess?
You silly goose. Don't you remember?
Oh.
We are on our way to my apartment. Sit closer. More vodka, my darling.
Mm.
It is the champagne of the Volga.
Sure, why not?
And what about some delicious jiva?
What's that?
Oh, Joy was the love candy of the Orient. Open your mouth, my little Kenyusha.
Oh, it's wonderful stuff.
Oh, this ain't happening. This ain't really happening, is it?
Oh, hush, my life. Go on, tell me more of your philosophy.
Hey, where was I, Princess Baby?
Angle.
Oh, yeah. It's all a matter of angles, see? I'm full of them, Your Highness. In this town, if you're sharp, cut your wits, never give a sucker an even break, one can rise to millions. Now, taking Two Forks.
Two Forks? Who is Two Forks?
In Oklahoma, where I was born.
Ah.
Out there, they don't even know what time it is. If I stood up there, Your Worship, I'd commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
I went away when I was 12.
More vodka, Kenyusha. You tell me about it. I must know all about you.
Naturally. I live with my Uncle Iggy, see? Well, a poor yokel. He spends all his time digging, mm-hmm. digging in his backyard. For what? Wait! Can you tie that?
So quaint. Go on.
Yeah, my cousins, Your Excellency.
Just as dopey, Joe and Fanny and all the rest. Mm-hmm. The cows giving milk today? It stifles me, get it? There's no room for a smart guy with a niche in a place like that. You listening?
Yes, drink up, my love.
So I get my first angle. I organize a cousin's club, elect myself treasurer, buy me a ticket to New York, and shake the dust forever. It's a big one, huh?
Your Grace, the room's turning sideways.
Come closer, my heart.
Hmm?
Kiss me again. Kiss me.
It's hot in here.
Then why not take off your overcoat, Kenyusha?
Oh, no. I'm all right now. Say, Princess. Whose cane is that over there by the piano? It's not mine.
No, my sweet. It is my husband.
Huh?
Some music.
You what?
Oh, don't be alarmed, Kenny. He's out of town. Oh, I hate him. Oh, I hate him, the beast. He abuses me so.
Oh, he does, huh?
Oh, Babushka, why am I telling you all this? Because always in my lonely life I am looking for someone. In my dreams I have seen him, and he has caressed my cheek. But the days go by and the years, and he does not come. And yet, always I know that someday, oh, and tonight it happened, at the midnight club, one glass.
Oh, Your Honor. Do you feel that way, too?
Oh, Kenny, you do love me.
Oh, do I? Oh, Princess, I'm crazy about you, Your Honor. With all my heart and soul, and it's a great privilege I have a vision. I'd do anything for you.
You do anything?
Anything, just to have you.
Would you commit murder for me?
Murder?
Would you commit murder for me, Kenny?
What's that?
No.
This is the speaker.
My husband.
Hmm?
It's his knock.
Your husband? I thought you...
Would you kill for me, Kenyusha?
He's got his hand.
Then here's my gun. Take it. When he opens the door, shoot.
Yeah, but
do you love me, Kenyusha? Do you want me?
Huh?
Oh, my heart. Think only that monster stands in the way.
The door. It's opening. He's coming in. There he is.
What are you waiting for?
Shoot.
What do you dream when you... Dream, my friend.
You killed him.
My golly! It was him! Mr. Aladdin!
Hey, Chief. You know the guy we've been getting complaints about all day? With Aladdin's lamp?
That raggedy bum with the fur coat in July? Casey, I want him picked up and put in a cage.
He's right here now, Chief. He wants to see you.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, Wild Eyes.
I can't stand anymore. I'm going to give myself up.
Casey, don't go away. I don't really want to be left here alone with this lunatic. What's up?
He says he just bumped off a guy a half hour ago.
What? Who'd he bump off?
Aladdin.
Aladdin?
Ain't that a hot one now?
I don't know what made me do it. I killed him in cold blood. I don't know what come over me, but she's absolutely in a clear, I tell you, and I'm willing to fly alone.
Hold on there. She, who is she?
The princess whom I was doomed to meet.
The princess?
Why, sure.
Now, don't give me any more of that Arabian Nights. What the devil are you wearing a fur coat in July? I think you're crazy.
I'm beginning to think so, too.
Shut up. Stop shaking. Now, what about that 50 grand fairy tale?
It's gone. After we killed him, we ran out of her apartment. I felt in my shirt and it was gone.
We killed him. Where's the princess?
She had an appointment with a hairdresser.
What? Sit down. You mean that murderous...
What murderous? I absolve her. I turned her head. For once in my life, I'm going to act like a man. I killed him. But I can't stand it anymore. My conscience been haunting me. It's like a nightmare.
You expect me to swallow that hocus-pocus? What do I look like?
Then don't swallow it, but please solve it for me.
Where is the corpus, if any?
Lay it dead in 2B.
All right, let's go. But if you're dragging me along on a wild goose chase, I'll put you away in a padded cell. Now, come on. It's vacant. Bare. No one even lives here. Where do you see your body?
I can't understand. My gosh, officer, I was just here, but now it's empty.
Hey, what are you trying to pull on
me?
Can
I help you, gentlemen? Who are you looking for?
Who are you?
I'm Mrs. Podolsky, the janitor.
Well, who lived here last? You know a Princess Julie?
A princess witch? I'm afraid, mister, you got the wrong building. No one's been living in this apartment for the last 6 months.
What about it, Pierre? You're the head waiter in this nightclub. Do you ever know or wait on such a dame?
A princess. A Princess Julie.
Yeah.
But no, Monsieur Inspector. She is utterly unknown in this establishment.
That's a lie! You remember darn well just a couple hours ago. My fur coat. She was sitting at the next table.
Yeah, do you know this eccentric jerk here? Huh? Take a good look at him.
Monsieur, I have never before seen him in my whole life.
Let go, officer. Let go, my neck. Where are you rushing?
Get back in my car, you. You're headed for the jerk. Princess Julie.
No, wait a minute. I remember something now. She gave me a piece of paper somewhere. A phone number. Here, look. The phone number. Her hairdresser's where I was to call her. Instead, I gave myself up. Honest, look.
Let's see.
Here. There's a phone in that store. Go ahead, call it. Ask for it. See if I'm crazy.
All right. Kenny, just one more chance I'll give you. But if you're giving me the business again, I'll tear you limb from limb. Come on.
Hello?
Oh, is this a hairdressing parlor?
What's it? What number do you want? Who is this?
Describer. A ravishing brunette.
Shut up. This is Inspector Ross, Police Department. Is this a hairdresser's?
My dear fellow, this is a private sanitarium for the insane.
What?
Dr. Bennett speaking.
Tell him her teeth are like a pile. Tell him...
Shut up, you... Sorry, Doc, I guess this is just a bum steer. You see, I got a prisoner here told me that a Princess Julie...
What? What's that? What's your prisoner's name?
Kenny Andrews.
Kenny Andrews, that's him. Don't let that man away. Get him right back here. He's an escaped lunatic.
What?
Well, I'll be... Now this makes sense. Look, Doc, give me your address, quick. I'm delivering him myself in person, and it'll be a pleasure.
Is the princess there? What do they say, huh?
What do they say? Brother, you're going home.
Let me go!
Is this your man, Doc?
Yes, that's him. He escaped from here 2 days ago.
You're a liar! I never seen you before in my life.
Attendant, give me a hand, quick.
Now, let me alone. What are you doing? I'll bust you one. Hey, please, this is a terrific...
Thank you, Inspector. It's lucky for the community you found him.
Yeah, and am I glad to unload this baby. What a ride he took me for. What an imagination.
He's definitely schizophrenic, poor lad. Too bad. Well, of course, we'll just keep him here under observation till he's committed elsewhere.
You notified his relatives?
Yes. They're on the way now from Oklahoma. They haven't seen him since he was a child. I hope they won't ask for his release. That would be tragic.
It'd be bloody murder. Well, he's a menace. I'm sure glad you're taking him out of circulation.
that's my story. See, the whole truth. I swear it all transpired. Listen to me, someone. If you don't believe it, then at least solve it for me. Let me out, you hear me? Open this door and let me out. Just while my cousins get here. That sawbones a liar. I tell the honest truth, so I'm a lunatic. I'm Kenny Andrews. I always know the right time. What am I doing in the hospital? Such things shouldn't happen to a dog. Open up, I say. Let me out.
You again, Mr. Andrews. Aren't we the troublesome patients?
You just wait till I get here.
Your cousins are here
that's
now.
Right,
let's calm down so they won't get frightened. So we can go home with them to Two Forks. Otherwise, we'll spend the rest of our life here. That's the boy. This way, please. Kenny is ready to see you now.
Oh, am I glad you guys came. If you only knew... You!
What is it you dream when you dream, my friend?
Aladdin. You're dead.
No. Cousin Joe. Alive.
Promise you will be very kind, Kenyusha.
Princess Julie. Oh, you're on that.
No, Cousin Fanny. You're crazy.
Oh, my golly, what is this? Am I still seeing things?
Hey. Hey, you two been taking me for a sleigh ride?
Oh, no, Cousin Kenny. How could we? Yokels like us take a sharp guy like you?
Not your dopey cousins from Two Forks, Kenny. The cow's giving milk today?
Oh, my golly, what's your angle? I don't get it. I don't get it at all.
You will, Kenny. You remember Uncle Iggy?
Huh?
Digging and digging in his backyard. Oh, what, Kenny?
Worms.
Right, Uncle Iggy died 2 weeks ago. You know from what, Kenny?
What?
Heart shock.
Huh?
You know what gave him heart shock, Kenny? He struck oil in his backyard and became a millionaire overnight.
Huh?
You know who he left the $6 million to in his will, Kenny?
Who?
You.
Huh?
But you're not going to enjoy it, Kenny, because you're a non-compos mentis. Get it?
You're crazy.
And that's where we come in, Kenny. You see, his will also reads that when you die or go crazy, the fortune's to be split among your other cousins.
He always did suspect you'd suddenly do one or the other, Kenny.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute! This has all been a frame-up. Sure, sure, I get it, everything. I've been framed! You wanted to make people think I'd gone haywire! So you put up this whole mishmash! How did you know where to trail me?
Easy. For a smart guy with a niche, only one place for him. New York.
And we met up with a certain bookie, the rest was easy.
Oh, I got a headache. I got things pounding in my ears. That gun I plugged you with.
Blanks.
That waiter at the casino.
Cousin Georgie.
The Sawbones.
Cousin Hank.
The Midget.
Cousin Lou.
The Janitor.
Cousin Bessie.
Oh, this should happen to me. To me, you crooks, you swindlers. You admit it. You stay there and admit it all.
Why not? What have we got to lose now?
Who got to do such a thing to your own cousin?
You remember the Cousins Club, Kenny?
Oh. Now you angle your way out of this, baby. Come on, Fanny, you weep. Let's go.
Make with the paper dolls, Kenny.
No, listen, you rogues. You can't pull this on me. Never, you'll never get away with it. You'll see. You think you're pretty slick, huh? Wise guys. Make with the paper dolls, huh? No. That'll never keep me here. Not Kenny Andrews. Such a thing shouldn't happen to a dog. What'll I do? Scream me, someone. Listen to me. All you punks tune in on my story. Do something. What are you just sitting for? This thing's funny. Help me. Advise me. For crying out loud. Give me an angle.
And so the curtain falls on the case of the missing mind, which was chosen by guest expert Craig Rice. Miss Rice is the author of Having a Wonderful Crime. This is your host, John Dixon Carr, hoping you'll be with us again next week at this time.
Case of the Missing Mind was written by Joseph Ruskell. In our cast were Carl Eastman, Ann Shepard, Bill Zuckert, Ralph Camargo, and Bert Collins. Music under the direction of Emerson Buckley, composed by Richard DuPage. Murder by Experts is produced and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Cogan. Bill Tonkin speaking. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Send Uncle Sam a dime to win this war, and he'll pay you back with interest when he's won it. The easiest, most convenient way to lend him these dimes is to enroll in the payroll savings plan. Just tell your boss to deduct 10 cents from every dollar he pays you and lend it to Uncle Sam in your name. Sign up for this simple savings plan today, and when victory comes, you will have war bonds in your pockets instead of Axis bonds on your wrists.
Nightfall was a radio series produced by the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Company, between July of 1980 and June of 1983. Now, it was primarily a supernatural horror series. The episode tonight is primarily a supernatural horror program. It does occasionally drift into other genres, such as science fiction, mystery, fantasy, and just good old human drama. The series was one of the most popular shows in CBC radio history. It produced over 100 episodes featuring a mix of original tales and adaptations of classic and somewhat more obscure short stories. It was written and starred the producer of the program, Bill Lane.
In the dream, you are falling, lost in the listening distance, as dark locks in. Nightfall. Good evening. Tonight, we're going to take you on a motoring trip. Of course, we can't promise that you will arrive at your destination in just one piece. The play, which introduces the work of theater director William Lane to radio, as well as this series, is called The Old Post Road.
September the 10th. It was my 25th birthday, but it seemed like a normal day. Weather was normal. Car was fine. There wasn't much traffic. We were on our way to Elwood to visit Wendy's parents. For the first time, right? About mid-afternoon, we stopped for a bit of vino, and one thing led to another, right? Birthdays. So, we were pretty mellowed out by the time it got dark. Yeah. It got dark, and we weren't even close to where we were going.
Oh, here, take this turnoff.
What, this one?
Yeah, it's the shortcut, the Old Post Road.
Shortcut? Looks pretty rough.
Well, it's late, right? And I grew up in this road. I used to know every mile of it.
You're the boss. And that's when it started. Feeling of being on another planet. In another time. Someplace familiar. Like we'd been there before. But there was something. Maybe the shadows. Maybe the trees. Or maybe just the old MG on the gravel. Highway hypnosis? It seemed like we'd been on the Old Post Road forever.
But they're great people, really, once you get to know them.
Mm.
Relax, they'll love you. God knows they've heard enough about you.
Yeah, right.
You're very quiet. You nervous?
No, I'm just a bit strung out. This road is really something else. Is it much further?
No, I don't think so. It's hard to tell. You can't see much. It's really pouring.
Yeah, it must be half an hour since it started.
What time is it?
8:53.
Oh, God, I must be blasted. How did it get so late? We said 6:30.
I have to get that headlight fixed.
Oh, slow down. Relax. They'll understand if we're late.
2.5 hours?
Sure, I'll think of something. You're not sorry we stopped this afternoon?
Are you kidding?
That was fine wine.
Chateau Neuf de Pape.
A wine so fine that it goes to your heart. Steady your head.
Yeah, well, I could tell you liked it. We were going to save that second bottle for your folks.
It was really good, you know.
What was?
You know what I mean. Stick with me, kid. I know how to make you relax.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh!
Sorry. I gotta keep my eyes on the road.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, that's okay.
If there's another bad one coming up.
Seems like we've been on this damn road forever. Do you know something? We haven't seen a single car since the turnoff.
Yeah. That's one of the things about the old post road. It's always deserted.
Thank God. It's pretty narrow in these curves.
My dad used to say you could make better time this way. No cops around either.
Funny nobody uses it.
Well, there's a lot of stories about this road.
Yeah? Stories?
You see, when I was a kid, you weren't allowed to come here after dark. Not unless your folks were with you. I don't know why. I think something happened here.
What happened?
I don't know. Someone was killed. I can't remember. It was years ago.
Well, what was supposed to happen if you came here?
I don't know. I think it had to do with a different time zone.
A time zone?
Well, it's just a small town kind of thing.
You mean some kind of ghostly hand comes out of the wood and zaps you?
Yeah.
Like, I am the spirit of the old post road.
Take me to your leader.
Oh, don't worry. We'll get there.
I sure hope so.
Mom always does her tuna casserole for guests. I bet she's got some waiting for us.
Well, yeah, I could go for that in a big way.
Yeah, I know what you mean. My stomach is eating my leg. Don't, here's the curve.
Oh, my God.
Ethan!
I can't.
Too late. Can't move.
Just reach the...
What?
The gas. Fire.
What's that?
The handle.
What?
Reach the handle.
Can't.
Oh, my God.
Steven!
It's gonna blow.
Sit tight, my lad. You've had a nasty shock.
Where am I?
Relax. You're safe now.
I was in a big armchair in an old farm kitchen, but I didn't know where I was. And I was cold.
Here, I'll wrap you in this blanket.
Thank you. Who are you?
Archer is the name. Ned Archer, son.
Ned Archer.
That's my name. Don't wear it out.
I don't think I know you.
No? How could you? Eh? See, I was standing by my window there. I hear this unholy crash. So I get out there, fast as my leg here will let me, and there's this crackling sound.
Oh, my God. The fire.
Starting to come back to you?
Yeah. A little.
Yeah. So I drag you out just in the nick of time. A moment later, the whole thing goes up in flames.
Where's Wendy?
She's your wife?
No, not exactly.
Oh. Oh, I see. She's fine. bit of rest and she'll be as good as new.
You're kidding. You mean we're safe? I can't believe it.
Hmm.
Well, I don't know how to thank you.
And don't thank me. Thank God.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you're not religious.
No.
Oh. Each to his own. How are you feeling now?
Like death warmed over. I'm so cold.
Oh, I'll make a fire. Warm you up.
Oh, man, what a way to spend your birthday.
Your birthday?
Yeah.
Well, isn't that something? It's my birthday, too.
Wow. What a coincidence.
There's no such thing as coincidence, Stephen. How old are you today?
25.
Just like I reckoned.
What? How did you know my name?
Your ID was in your pocket.
Oh, right. What did you mean about you figured I was 25?
Just a friendly observation.
There was something about this old guy. I got the feeling he knew a bit too much about me. And that coincidence about our birthdays made me feel... I don't know. I couldn't put my finger on it. I had to get a fix on what was happening. Did you call the cops?
No need for that.
What happened to the driver of the other car?
Well, I don't rightly know.
That car must have been totaled. And you never leave the scene of an accident. Can't they arrest you for that?
Couldn't tell you.
The more I heard, the more I felt that there was something happening with Archer. I didn't want to be alone with him. Wendy must be in the bedroom. Right behind that yellow door. If I could just talk to her.
I don't think that's such a good idea.
What?
She needs her rest.
Well, I just want to make sure she's all right.
Don't you trust me?
Sure I do. But she'll be worried. Look, maybe you think because we're not married and all that, but we're really very
close. Best thing you can do for her right now is to let her be.
What's that?
Just the kindling.
What are you doing?
Stoking the fire.
Gas. The fire. The handle.
What? No.
Reach the handle.
I can't.
Oh, my God.
What's the matter, son?
It's gonna blow.
Now?
I don't know what happened.
You're burning up.
I feel so cold.
Here. Put this cloth on your forehead.
Thank you. I feel better now. What time is it?
I couldn't rightly say.
My watch is stuck.
I haven't worn a watch for 25 years. Since Ethel passed away.
Ethel?
She's, or she was, my wife.
She died 25 years ago.
To the very day.
On your birthday? That's amazing.
So was she.
Look, I'm sorry, I'm a bit uptight. I gotta call Wendy's folks. It must be midnight. Do you have a phone?
You sit down. Plenty of time for that.
I'd better call them, just to let them know.
You stay put.
Listen, I gotta make that call.
Go ahead. I'm not stopping you.
I didn't know there for a second.
Phone's over there.
This should only take a minute. I'll just tell him.
sorry. The number you have dialed is no longer in service.
That sounds like... I must have dialed it wrong. It's going through.
I am sorry. The number you have dialed is no longer in service.
What's going on?
Didn't I tell you the phone was out?
No, you didn't. Anyway, the phone's fine. The problem's at the other end.
I know.
How do you know?
I tried it earlier.
Yeah, where'd you get the number?
I found it in her purse. You're looking pale, son. Why don't you lie down over there?
It was like a time warp. 25 years ago tonight, his wife died on his birthday. Tonight, it's my birthday. My 25th birthday. Now, what if... No, it can't be. He's been messing around with our stuff. And he wants to keep me here. I gotta get to Wendy before he...
Where are you going?
Wendy?
Quiet. You'll wake her.
I'm warning you.
Don't touch that door, son.
You get out of my way. She's not here. Oh, my God. She's still in the car.
Archer! Archer, come back here!
Damn. Archer! Is she dead?
Don't take it so hard, son. You'll be joining her before too long.
A gun? What, are you gonna kill me? You're out of your mind.
Oh, no. Not me, my lad. You'll understand it all soon enough.
Did you kill her, too?
Why would I kill her? I got no grudge with her.
Well, why?
I don't like drinking drivers.
No, so I had a glass of wine. That's no reason.
Two empty bottles in the car.
I can't believe this. What do you have against me?
Can't you guess?
No.
I was in the other car.
Oh. I'm sorry.
I know your kind. Always in a hurry, aren't you?
Look, I'm sorry. Listen, I'll call the cops. I mean, we're civilized people, right? Just give me the gun.
Ethel was murdered.
Murder?
It was no accident. It was a drunken driver from the city. He was killed, too, on that same spot.
Yeah, but that was 25 years ago.
You were born that same day.
What? You mean you believe in reincarnation or something? That's ridiculous. It's got nothing to do with me.
God works in mysterious ways.
Oh, this is crazy. Look, I can't help what someone else did 25 years ago, before I was born. You can't make me responsible for that. Hey, just give me the gun.
No!
You're crazy!
Let go!
Oh, my God. What have I done? Archer. He's dead. Who's there?
Stephen, are you all right?
Wendy.
You look like you've just seen a ghost.
I can't believe it. How did you get out?
Well, the first thing I remember, I was propped up against a tree. I thought you'd vanished off the face of the earth, so I ran down to the nearest farm and called the cops.
Wait a minute. What farm? Why didn't you come up here?
Well, that's the old Archer place. It's been deserted. For years.
He saved our lives, Wendy.
Who? Ned Archer?
Listen, Wendy. He's dead. I killed him.
You killed him? But he...
Yeah, it was self-defense. He had some crazy idea I killed his wife 25 years ago.
Ethel Archer.
Yeah. How did you know?
Everyone knew about the Archers. They had an accident.
He was in the car?
Stephen, they were both killed. It's called The Legend of the Old Post Road. Ned and Ethel Archer. When I was a kid, they used to say their ghosts haunted the old post road at night, waiting. That's what I came back here to warn you.
Do you really believe that?
Listen to me.
Sirens.
Stephen.
You gotta be my witness.
Stephen, you don't understand.
Look, they'll get me for murder. You gotta swear you saw it happen.
You can't kill a dead man, Stephen.
Oh, my God. Am I the only sane person here?
It's all over, Stephen.
Stephen James Fowler?
What?
That's him.
Better come along with us.
Where are we going?
Hospital.
Why are we going to the hospital? I'm all right.
Get moving, kid.
No, wait a minute. I gotta figure this out.
What's he saying?
Wendy. Hey, let me go. We gotta bring Wendy. Wendy? What happened back there on the road? What, a bad dream? I just have to get a fix on things. I can hardly keep my eyes open.
Ten four.
You need a blood box?
Negative, we're on the flip.
What's he saying?
Adjust procedure. Bring it on and check it, 10-4.
Roger.
Where are we going? Where's Wendy?
Cool it, Harvey.
Right. Where are we?
Fill him in, Harv.
It's called the Old Post Road, kid.
What?
We're still on it?
Sure. Any objections?
He's had a shock.
Does he know about his girlfriend?
What about her?
Yeah, but I don't think he understands.
Well, what's happened to her?
Dead on impact, kid.
But I just saw her by the road.
She's dead.
Oh.
No. What year is this?
Oh, boy. We got a real live one here.
Tell him, Harvey.
It's 1957, kid. September the 10th.
Oh, no.
You can't kill a dead man, son.
I wasn't even there.
You're here now, kid.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's all over, son.
No, I just have to get out of this time zone.
Hey, what's this problem? Pull over. Get off this road.
Get off the wheel.
I'm not dead. Not yet.
What took you so long?
Yeah, the brain scan, it just stopped.
Too much tissue burned away.
Yeah. What about the girl?
Lost her, too. They never had a chance.
I can't believe it. The scan was so active.
Yes, that's normal.
I was sure he was going to make it.
It was a losing battle, from the top.
So, the brain can keep on functioning. Who can say what he was thinking all that time?
Hopkins suggests a flash of disconnected thoughts. Dream, if you like.
You're kidding.
Michelet goes even further. He suggests that when the nerves are burned away, the brain tunes in to paranormal channels, which suggest clairvoyance and communication with the dead.
That's pretty hard to swallow.
It's a lot of bunk. The thing is, no one's ever lived to talk about it.
Say, what about the other car?
Well, you won't believe this. They can't find the other car. Or the driver.
What? That car must have been totaled.
Yeah. It's strange. They're still out looking.
Thank you.
but true.
At a time when he had already achieved recognition as one of America's most eminent inventors and physicists, Thomas A. Edison conducted a series of experiments in thought transference. He constructed an elaborate electric apparatus and sought, by means of it, to bring about purely mental communication. But, as he himself freely admitted, he obtained not the slightest results. And yet, Thomas Edison believed in extrasensory perception, for long before this he had met a man called Reese, the man who saw everything. Ken?
It was a friend of Thomas Edison's, a young woman named Miss Olson, who first interested him in the man named Reese. A few days later, Reese appeared at Edison's laboratory.
Well, let's have a demonstration.
All right, sir. Miss Olson, would you mind going into the other room and writing down on a piece of paper your mother's name, the place of her birth?
One minute there, young man. What proof do I have that you and Miss Olson haven't made a few prior arrangements before you ever got here? No, I demand to be the subject. I'll be the one who goes out of the room.
And with that, Thomas Edison, his eyes twinkling brightly and a smile of triumph on his face, slipped out of the room and walked across the courtyard to an adjoining building.
My experiment with the alkaline electric battery. He couldn't know about that, because nobody in the world but myself does.
Chuckling to himself, he scribbled in small and almost illegible letters the question which had so long troubled him.
Is there anything better than hydroxide of nickel for an alkaline battery?
Then he folded the paper several times and held it clutched in his hand. And then at last he left the building and retraced his steps to the room where Reese and Miss Olson awaited him. He said nothing as he entered. It was Reese who spoke first.
Do you really want my opinion, Mr. Edison?
Why? Oh, I don't know what you're talking about, young man.
Well, you asked me a question, didn't you? And here's the answer. No, there is nothing better than hydroxide of nickel for an alkaline battery.
Thomas Edison had no explanation for the incident. He could only accept it as valid and authentic, if incomprehensible. As he himself put it,
I do not pretend to be able to explain this faculty. I am convinced that the needs of civilization will produce some great discovery by means of men endowed with this power. The rare seers of the present generation will become the multitude of coming generations.
In these words, America's great scientist expressed his faith in a power which is still looked upon with skepticism by other scientists of lesser stature than he. A power that enables men to see without the use of their senses. A power incredible but true.
Got a break. But we'll be back real soon with some science fiction. And I hope you like science fiction. I sure do. Up next is an episode of the CBS Radio Workshop, Housing Problem. It aired on June the 16th of 1957. I could say elves, but it's not elves exactly. And besides, it's more like pixies or something. The episode tonight is a nicely wrought adaptation of a short story by Henry Kirchner, who was born in 1915 and died in 58. He was a highly respected writer of science fiction and fantasy during the late 30s, 40s, and 50s, who wrote under a really large number of pseudonyms, including Lewis Patchett. Lewis Patchett may have been more famous than Henry Kirchner. It should be noted that Patchett was a name that was used for collaborations between himself and his wife, the excellent science fiction and horror writer Catherine Lucille Moore, C.L. Moore. An odd thing is that although it does not surprise me that Henry Kirchner is dead, when I was first introduced to his stuff, probably around 1960 or so, I had no idea that he had passed away. In fact, as I say this to you now, it's only been a few minutes ago that I learned. Here's to absent friends.
Hollywood, the CBS Radio Workshop.
I don't care what you say. I say he keeps a canary in that cage.
That's my wife, Jacqueline. Jackie, for short. A woman of firm opinions.
And I say, leave that cage alone, do you hear?
That's Mr. Henchard, our boarder. A man of similar firm convictions. Me? My name's Eddie. And I say, I don't care what kind of a bird he keeps in the cage, so long as he pays the rent. The CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind, presents Housing Problem. An unlikely story, but the kind of story you're not likely to hear anywhere else except on the workshop. Housing Problem, an experiment with your imagination. Adapted by Sam Pierce from the short story by Henry Kuttner. Produced and directed by William N. Robeson. My wife, Jackie, and I both work. We have to keep up the house payments. And we couldn't make ends meet even then if it weren't for the rent Mr. Henchard pays us for the back room. So, naturally, we were pretty worried when he announced one night.
I gotta leave town for a while.
Oh.
You're giving up the room?
I'm doing nothing of the sort.
Oh, that's nice.
I'm quite willing to keep paying the rent while I'm gone, providing...
Providing what, Mr. Henchard?
Providing I can count on you two to cooperate.
Why, of course, Mr. Henchard.
Oh, whatever you say.
I'll be gone about a week. Some property of mine up north needs tending to. I don't like to leave my birdcage behind, but I can't take it with me on a bus.
Oh, we'll be more than glad to take care of it.
That's just what I don't want you to do. Don't go near it. Don't touch it. Don't remove the cover.
But the canary, it'll starve.
Canary. Canary, you listen to me. I'll leave plenty of food and water. You just keep hands off. That's how you cooperate. Stay away from that birdcage, understand?
Yes, Mr. Henchard.
But I don't understand.
You heard me. Keep your hands off that cage.
Yes, Mr. Henchard.
The next night, when Jackie and I got back from work, Mr. Henchard was gone, but the cage was still there in the middle of his room, sitting on a pedestal, shrouded by a flowered cretonne cover.
Eddie, we promise.
Well, we're staying away from it, aren't we? We didn't promise not to look at it.
Hey, Eddie, there's a note pinned on the cover.
Yeah.
Well, what's it say?
How do you like this? It says... Mind now, don't touch this cage.
Honestly, you'd think we were a couple of kids or something.
Just for that, I'd like to yank the cover off the silly thing and... What was that?
It came from the cage.
Doesn't sound like any bird I ever heard.
Sounds like someone moving furniture. And opening a bottle.
Champagne for the canaries, no doubt.
Oh, Eddie.
You don't think we ought to just peek under the cover?
No, I don't. I think we ought to tiptoe out of here and go to bed.
Okay. But I'd still like to see what kind of a bird it is that can open a champagne bottle. The next day, that silly birdcage was so much on my mind, I nearly fed my hand into the planing mill down at the plant. Jackie admitted the same kind of trouble. Her shorthand went way off and her typing fell below 50 words a minute while she worried about Mr. Henchard's bird. I guess it was really plain curiosity, but we rationalized it into concern.
Eddie, it's got to be thirsty by now.
With all that champagne?
Well, hungry maybe.
Maybe. Of course, I'm not exactly a bird lover, but... I'd hate to think of a poor little feathered creature dying of hunger when I could do anything to save it.
Oh, darling, you have a great heart.
Oh? It's nothing, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way I feel about things.
Well, then we'd better make sure.
Yes. Yes, I think we should.
We'll share the responsibility.
Yes, together.
You lift the cover and I'll take a quick look.
We'll both lift the cover and we'll both take a quick look.
All right. You take that end and I'll take this.
Ready?
One,
two,
three. Eddie!
It's a house. A perfect little doll's house. What was that noise?
It sounded like shades being pulled down. Eddie, it was a shade. I saw it snap shut on that tiny little window there.
There are lights in the house.
Oh, Eddie, the little green shutters, the white woodwork.
But what's inside there?
I never heard of a canary that could pull down shades.
Oh, this is crazy.
Eddie, look, at the chimney.
Smoke. There's smoke coming out of it.
The canaries are cooking.
Oh, something is cooking, but who says it's a canary? Who says it's any kind of a bird?
But what else could it be? It's a bird cage.
It's a house in a bird cage. A perfect little house down to the very last detail. Look, look, there's a doormat and a tiny little doorbell.
Ring it.
Ring it?
The doorbell. Ring it.
How am I going to ring a doorbell on a house that's inside a bird cage? I can't get my finger through those bars. Cage is soldered to the stand.
Well, maybe you could use a pencil.
Pencil, sure, good idea. Here. Now, let's see if I can get the tip through the bars and against the doorbell button. That's about it. Mm-hmm. Now, push it.
Eddie!
I don't think they're going to answer it.
Well, they must be such little things.
Things?
Birds or whatever lived in that house.
Well, they won't come to the door. Let's see if we can poke the pencil in a window and have a look inside.
Be careful, Eddie.
I think now if I can get my eye up against the cage here, I can see through the... Out!
Eddie!
The bright flashed at me like a flashlight right in my eye, like a tiny beam of light from a flashlight.
Eddie, let's go. Let's leave them alone, whatever they are.
I'd like to take that cage apart.
Oh, no, Mr. Henshard.
Well, when he gets back, I'm going to ask him a few questions. He can't keep pixies. It isn't in the lease.
He doesn't have a lease.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I suppose we better leave it alone. We need the money he pays us, that's for sure.
And whatever it is that lives in the cage hasn't bothered us up to now.
Yeah. Let's cover it up and turn in. Maybe they'll be in a friendlier mood tomorrow. Yeah. Boy, whatever that is, it's out of tune.
I think you've heard its feelings. They're turning out all the lights.
Jackie had nightmares all night. I know, because I didn't sleep a wink. So, the next morning, we decided on a quick look before we went to work. Now, let's be real quiet. Maybe we can sneak up on them.
You think they'll be leaving for work, too?
What kind of work? Painting buttercups? Now, be quiet, and I'll get the cover off.
Okay. Look! One of the window shades is up, and the window's open.
Now, maybe I can see inside this morning. I can just get up close enough. I think I can see...
What is it?
An eye. A great big bloodshot eye staring back at me.
Let me see. Eddie, it's a little mirror.
A mirror?
Yes, a little mirror hanging on a wall. And that was your eye looking back at you.
Well, it didn't look like my eye. It was bloodshot.
Well?
Very funny.
Eddie, look, on the porch.
It's a milk bottle.
And it's purple.
Purple milk?
From a purple cow, maybe.
Oh, cut it out. Hey, is that a newspaper there beside it?
It looks like one.
Let me see if I can make out the printing on it. Looks like a headline. It's in red, and it says, Extra, Fatspa moves on tur.
Fatspa moves on tur? What kind of talk is that?
Well, pixie talk, no doubt. Fatspa moves on tur. I'm going to buy me a magnifying glass today. I'd like to read the rest of that paper. I don't know how Jackie and I got through that day at work, but somehow we did. And that night, we didn't even wait to get our coats off before we went in to see the cage. I heard the sound before Jackie did.
Eddie, listen.
Music.
And it's good music, too.
But it sounds so little.
Well, what else? They're little people.
It stopped.
They must have heard us. Let's get the cover off. No lights, windows shut, and the blinds drawn.
The milk and the paper's gone, too.
Yeah, yeah. Wait a minute. Is that a sign on the door?
I can't make it out. It's so tiny.
I'll use my new magnifying glass. Quarantine. Scoppy fever.
Scoppy fever?
Why, the little liars. I'll bet they don't have scoppy fever at all.
You only get scoppy fever in April, don't you?
April and Christmas. That's when the bread and butterflies carry it. Where's my pencil? I'm going to ring the bell again.
They're not going to answer. There go the shades.
Pretty snooty, if you ask me. After all, it's our house. Their house is in, if you follow me.
I wish we could just see them. Just one little look at them, whatever they are.
Well, I'll try one more thing. I'll write them a note.
On what?
On the door, like this. Let us in. There.
But we don't want to get in. We just want to see them.
Well, they'll know what we mean. Now, let's leave them alone, and maybe in the morning they'll have an answer for us.
Eddie, the quarantine sign's gone.
Oh, there's another one on the door. They've answered us. They've written us a note.
Oh, read it, read it.
Wait till I get my magnifying glass. There. Printed on a little card. WETPAINT.
Wet paint. I knew you shouldn't have written on the door. They've gone and repainted it. They're neat little things, whatever they are.
Wet paint, indeed.
There's more milk on the porch. Green milk this time and another newspaper.
Yeah. Let's see what the headlines are today. Extra. Fatspa overshoots Tur. What kind of news is that?
Well, I don't know, but I think we'd better cover the cage, Eddie. I think we've bothered them enough. We don't want them to get mad at us. They might blab to Mr. Henchard and get us in trouble.
You sound as though you thought they could talk.
Well, who says they can't? They can read, they can write, so they can talk.
The next few days were like nightmares. We'd pretend to be working all day, and then at night, we'd immediately go into Mr. Henchard's room and uncover the cage. And always there would be smoke coming out of the chimney and smells of cooking and the sounds of dinner preparations in the evening. And every morning, new bottles of milk, different color each day, blue, red, yellow, and the newspaper headlines. Extra, Tur slides toward Fatspa. Extra, Fatspa goes up. There were even tiny little letters in the mailbox. And one morning there was a telegram. Oh, but we couldn't get to them. Day after day we tried to see inside the little house, but always it was the same. When we took the cover off the birdcage, the noises would stop. The shades would snap shut, the lights would go out, and nothing was left but the lazy spiral of smoke from the tiny brick chimney. Then one night, Jackie and I had it out.
But what would Mr. Henchard say?
No, I don't care. I've got to find out what goes on in that house. My work's going all to pot.
I know, Eddie. I filed a letter today that I was supposed to mail.
I almost welded my thumb to a wing section. Heck with Mr. Henchard. Let's go in and find out what lives in that cage, even if we have to melt it down with a blowtorch.
Sure is quiet in here tonight.
I'll get the light.
I'll get the cover off. Oh, no. Eddie.
What is it?
Look, on the front door.
It's a sign. A big sign.
For rent. It says for rent. Oh, Eddie, they've moved out.
They sure left the house clean. Look inside there. The floors are polished, the walls are scrubbed, but the furniture's gone and the window shades.
Oh, Eddie, what are we going to do? What are we going to say when Mr. Henchard comes home?
Well, we didn't have long to wait. The very next night, Mr. Henchard blew in like a blast of cold air, went directly to his room, and blew back out again considerably hotter.
Busybodies, pliers, I told you not to touch the cage.
Oh, Mr. Henchard.
I told you to leave it alone. Oh, no, not you two. You had to fool around with it.
Well, Mr. Henchard, we only thought they might be thirsty.
You only thought you had to stick your noses into somebody else's business. That's what you thought. Well, you've done it. You've ruined the whole thing. They've gone, moved out, lock, stock, and barrel. They've moved. And I'm moving, too.
Oh, Mr. Henchard, we're so sorry.
Sorry? It took me months to build that little house to their exact specifications, and months more to coax them to live in it. Now you spoiled it. They won't be back.
Who won't be back?
My tenants. I'll have to build a new house now. But this time I won't leave it within the reach of meddlers.
Mr. Henchard,
Are you a magician?
Magician? I'm a craftsman. A mighty good one. That's all it takes. You treat them right and they'll treat you right. It isn't everybody who knows how to build the right sort of house for them.
But who are they?
Who are they? You mean, who are they? Little folk, of course. Call them what you like. Nixies, pixies, leprechauns, brownies. They got lots of names. But all they want is a quiet, respectable neighborhood to live in. Not a lot of peeping and prying. Give the property a bad name. No wonder they moved out. They always pay the rent on time, too.
Rent?
Luck. Good luck. But you expect to pay in money.
But luck? There's no such thing as luck, Mr. Hensher. That's a superstition.
Superstition? Hey, you remember when I kicked that boulder loose and it fell in the wooden steps we was going down at the beach that day?
I remember.
Boulder hit the step below me, went clear through the wood, it was so rotten. I'd have broke my neck if I'd stepped in it.
Oh, that's right.
Things like that happen to me all the time. That's luck. That's the little people paying their rent. And now you've ruined it. Goodbye.
Oh, wait, you're forgetting your cage.
You can keep it. Keep the house, too. No decent folk will live in it now. You've ruined it.
Watch those steps, Mr. Hancher.
Friars, meddlers, busy
Oh, Eddie, body. His luck has left him already.
Yeah. Boy, that was a nasty fall.
Eddie, take me down to Moriarty's for a nightcap, will you? I feel terrible. I still feel terrible.
Yeah. The nightcap didn't help much. Let's turn in. It's late.
Shall we take a last look at the cage?
Can't hurt anything. Come on.
Eddie, listen.
They're back. The house is rented again.
And they're having a party. Eddie, they're happy in there.
Funny, we're in. We've got the house and we've got the tenants in it.
Maybe we'll have the luck that goes with them. Maybe they'll pay us the rent now.
Yeah, but we won't bother them anymore.
We'll leave them alone.
We'll never peek or pry again.
And if they're happy, they'll probably stay on for always. Oh, Eddie, this is wonderful.
The next day, I felt almost like my old self, even though we had lost our roomer. We had new tenants in the little house, and it was ours now, all ours. It was just before quitting time. I was working on the big metal planer when I heard somebody yell.
Eddie! Look out for that long car! Behind you, Eddie! Look out! He's pushing me into the planer, Mike! Please!
Eddie! You all right?
Yeah,
I think so. What stopped the planer, Mike? It was right on me. I thought it was going to slice me up like a cold cut.
It was one of those cylinder casings that fell into the planer and jammed it just as you reached the blade. I never saw nothing like it in my life. Oh, boy, what luck.
Luck. Luck, Mike, that's it. It's luck. Good luck. They're paying their rent already.
They're what?
They're paying their rent in luck. Oh, boy, wait till I tell Jackie about this. Imagine those wonderful little guys, Jackie. Saved my life and they've only been in the house one day.
It was a miracle, Eddie. You could have been killed.
Yeah, any other time the planer would have gone right on slicing and I'd have gone into it. You know what I've been thinking?
No, what?
I ought to write them a note of thanks. Let them know I'm grateful.
We promised we'd leave them alone, Eddie.
Oh, but this would be different. I just lift up the cover on the cage and slip the note in and cover it up again. It couldn't hurt anything.
Well, I don't know.
Matter of fact, I've already written the note. Oh, come on. Let's take it into them.
You won't try to mess around with
them?
Oh,
I promise. Anyway, who messed around with them before? Just me?
I know. Come on.
What's going on in there?
Sounds like the same party they were having last night.
Only it's bigger and louder. Come on, let's get the cover off.
Eddie, look!
Bottles. Empty bottles all over the porch and garbage pails.
Scattered all over the place and, smell the smoke coming out of the chimney.
It smells like corned beef and skunk cabbage.
Jackie, what have we gotten there?
Well, they're certainly not the same class of tenants Mr. Henchard had.
That's it, that's it. He said the place would run down.
He said he'd have to build a new house to get the decent kind of tenants. Oh, Eddie, what have we done?
We've inherited the Jeter Lesters, the Jukes, and the Kallikaks. The place looks like Tobacco Road.
Well, there's even a clothesline stretched across the front window.
Well, that does it. I'm not going to put up with sloppy tenants. I'll pour water down the chimney and send them all packing.
Eddie, you can.
I can and I will. There's no reason for us to put up with this kind of nonsense.
But there is a reason, Eddie. Don't you remember? They pay their rent.
You mean the planer?
You would have been killed today if you hadn't had some extra luck. Some extra good luck. These pixies may be sloppy, but they pay their rent.
You're right, honey. You're absolutely right. I fall in the planer and a cylinder casing jams it in time. But I'll be out of work for a week while they fix it. But Mr. Henchard's luck worked all the way. If he'd have fallen in a planer, a fuse would have blown and he'd have been back at work the next day on full salary.
Okay. So Mr. Henchard had a better class of tenant. Ours are sloppy, so our luck will be a little sloppy too, but they stay. They stay here if they have the wildest parties in town.
Oh, you're right. We own a slum, but it's better than nothing. Let's go down to Moriarty's for a drink. I think we need it.
Ain't a fit night out for man or beast.
How about Pixie? I wonder what Moriarty would say if we told him about our tenants.
He probably 86ers and souls out of the place.
Stand back, honey. The bus is coming by. I might splash mud on.
He's coming awfully fast for a wet night.
I'll say he is, the crazy idiot. Jackie, jump and stay quiet. You all right?
Yeah. I think so. How did he ever miss us?
Caught his skid at the last minute.
Oh.
Pure luck.
Pure luck? And us sitting here with mud all over us?
We may be muddy, but we're alive. Come on. Let's get into Moriarty's.
Oh, boy, can I use a drink.
Right. Two doubles, Moriarty, and fast.
Okay, Eddie. Hey, what happened? You two fall in the mud?
Yeah.
Boy, that's bad luck, kid.
No. You're wrong, Moriarty. Not bad luck. Good luck. Sloppy, but good.
You're so right, honey. Well, here's luck.
The CBS Radio Workshop has presented Housing Problem, a play for radio by Sam Pierce, adapted from the short story by Henry Kuttner. Shirley Mitchell was heard as Jackie, Shepard Mencken as Eddie, and Dawes Butler as Mr. Henchard, Mike, and Moriarty. The original score was composed and conducted by Leo Diamond. Sound patterns by Ray Kemper and Gus Bays. Next week, from New York, the workshop will present Norman DeLoGioia's Pulitzer Prize-winning composition, Meditations on Ecclesiastes, with Edward R. Murrow, Father Lawrence McGinley, Rabbi Theodore L. Adams, Dr. Oswald Hoffman, Senator John Kennedy, and a 55-piece string orchestra conducted by Alfredo Antonini. This is the CBS Radio Network.
The Last Supper by T.D. Ham. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Reading by Bologna Times. The Last Supper by T.D. Ham. Before reading this story, prepare yourself for a jolt and a chill in capsule form. O. Henry could have been proud of it. It could well become a minor classic. Hampered as she was by the child in her arms, the woman was running less fleetly now. A wave of exultation swept over Guldran, drowning out the uneasy feeling of guilt at disobeying orders. The instructions were mandatory and concise. No capture must be attempted individually. In the event of sighting any form of human life, the ship must be notified immediately. All small craft must be back at the landing space not later than 1 hour before takeoff. Anyone not so reporting will be presumed lost. Guldran thought uneasily of the great seas of snow and ice sweeping inexorably toward each other since the earth had reversed on its axis in the great catastrophe a millennium ago. Now, summer and winter alike brought paralyzing gales and blizzards, heralded by the sleety snow in which the woman's skin-clad feet had left the tracks which led to discovery. His trained anthropologist's mind speculated avidly over the little they had gotten from the younger of the two men found nearly a week before, nearly frozen and half-starved. The older man had succumbed almost at once. The other, in the most primitive sign language, had indicated that, of several humans living in caves to the west, only he and the other had survived to flee some mysterious terror. Guldran felt a throb of pity for the woman and her child, left behind by the men, no doubt, as a hindrance. But what a stroke of fortune that there should be left a male and female of the race to carry the seed of Terra to another planet. And what a triumph if he, Guldran, should be the one to return at the 11th hour with the prize. No need of calling for help. This was no armed war party, but the most defenseless being in the universe, a mother burdened with a child. Guldran put on another burst of speed. His previous shouts had served only to spur the woman to greater efforts. Surely there was some magic word that had survived even the centuries of illiteracy, something equivalent to the bread and salt of all illiterate peoples. Cupping his hands to his mouth, he shouted, "Food! Food!" Ahead of him, the woman turned her head, leapt lightly in mid-stride, and went on, slowing a little, but still running doggedly. Guldran's pulse leaped. He yelled again, "Food!" The instant that his foot touched the yielding surface of the trap, he knew that he had met defeat. As his body crashed down on the fire-sharpened stakes, he knew, too, the terror from which the last men of the human race had fled. Above him, the woman looked down, her teeth gleaming wolfishly. She pointed down into the pit, spoke exultantly to the child. "Food," said the last woman on earth. End of The Last Supper by T.D. Hamm.
And another break. Hopefully this will be the last one. The final segment tonight is an episode of The Black Museum, The Mandolin String, in which a pretty, vivacious, blue-eyed widow and her mandolin figure prominently in this case about two accidental deaths. The Black Museum is a 1951 radio crime drama produced by Harry Allen Towers for the BBC. It would later air in the United States on the Mutual Network between January the 1st, 1952 and December 30th, 1953. of 1952. The show dramatized these true cases taken from the files of Scotland Yard's Black Museum, wherein the narrator, the inimitable Orson Welles, would tell us the story of one or another grisly murders, always, well, nearly always, accomplished by the means of some ordinary object that was then, at least, and maybe still, preserved and on exhibit in Scotland Yard's Black Museum.
Orson Welles, speaking from London. The Black Museum, a repository of death. Here in the grim stone structure on the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse of homicide, where everyday objects, a crumpled newspaper, a tin can of lighter fluid, a small radio, all are touched by murder. A mandolin string. Familiar object.
I'm told, Inspector, that mandolins are mighty popular with young folk these days.
Popular? Yes, they are. However, I'm rather happy to say their popularity is confined to music, not to murder.
Today, this mandolin string can be found in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum. In just a moment, you will hear The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles. Black Museum, starring Orson Welles.
Well, here we are in the Black Museum, Scotland Yard's Museum of Murder. Here lies death, arranged neatly on the shelves and tables open to your view. Now, here's a spoon. It's a simple household spoon. Our murderer was meticulous. With this, he measured out a careful dose of poison. That oar up there on the wall, that was used by the stroke of a famous rowing aid at Henley. Later, it was used in anger, swung at a man who stood on the edge of a pier, stunning him. The man drowned in the Thames very quickly. Ah, here we are, the mandolin string. Just a coil of rust-spotted wire now. String from a mandolin. A relic of another era. An era of polished carriages, well-groomed horses, simple, sedate living, Edwardian England, and Louise Evans.
Louise, my dear.
Shh. Stuart, darling, I'm playing for you.
In more ways than one, she's playing for you, Stuart.
Louise, you've got to listen.
Go ahead, son. She'll listen. Just say the right words.
Louise, I love you. You're adorable.
You're getting closer, Stuart. You're doing better now.
Louise, my darling, will you marry me?
At last. That's the way, Stuart. You see? I told you she was playing for you.
church organ, not Louise's mandolin, played them up the aisle that June. They were quite happy, quite domestic, particularly on the quiet winter evenings.
You're looking very well tonight, Louise.
Thank you, dear. Anything of interest in the newspaper, Stuart?
No, nothing you'd want to know about.
Oh, Stuart, darling,
mm-hmm.
I wonder if you'd mind...
Something you want, sweet?
Well, Maisie's gone to her room. I hate to disturb her.
Let me get it for you, whatever it is.
Well, thank you, dear. It's just that...
Yes?
Well, you may think it's a little odd, but...
Come
well,
now.
I have this funny little desire for a glass of wine.
Don't apologize, darling. There's nothing wrong in a glass of wine. Is there any in the pantry?
Well, no, dear, that's just it. A trip down to the cellar.
Not another word. My pleasure is to serve you, my dear.
The husband gets up. He puts his newspaper aside, leaves the room where his pretty young wife sits by the fireside. Walks down the hallway to the cellar entrance, pausing on the way to pick up a candle from the table by the stairs. Lights the candle, opens the little doorway. The candle flickers, casting a fitful yellow light, darkening the shadows where its beams fail to penetrate. Stuart Mason starts down the stairs.
A terrible shock, Mrs. Mason. I know. If you take a sleeping powder...
Oh, no, Doctor. Oh, it was my fault. My silly wish for a glass of wine. If I hadn't asked him... Oh, Doctor, the least I can do is to face my grief. That's the least I can do for poor Stuart.
If you wish, Mrs. Mason, I understand. Death is a terrible thing. When it comes so suddenly to one so young, it is most terrible of all.
Yes, it is terrible. A broken neck, falling down the cellar stairs by flickering candlelight on a simple and hardly necessary errand.
My dear, as a close friend of both your late husband and yourself, I feel justified in asking you to contain your grief. After all, you're young, and if I may say so, pretty.
Nelson, you are sweet. I simply do not know how I would have lived through these long, long months without poor dear Stuart's friends. Particularly you.
This brings me to a point, my dear. I've meant to discuss it with you. I begin to feel something slightly more than respect for you, Louise. If I may take the liberty...
Nelson, watch your words. Look out, Nelson. A pretty blonde widow with wide blue eyes. So delicate and fragile. Watch your step.
Oh, my loneliness in this house. At night, the floors creak. They seem to try to speak with me. Maisie does her best, but it's still so... Well, you know. You're lonely too, aren't you?
I must confess, Louise, that I am. Now see here, young lady. We're going to start a new life for you.
Oh, Nelson. Some cream for Mrs. Church, Maisie.
Yes, madam.
Oh, thank you. You know, Louise, this is the nicest idea... Having coffee with our men folk, I mean. I always hated the idea of the ladies withdrawing while the men had their port alone after dinner.
Well, I can't say I mind when our hostess is as lovely a bride as Louise. Hey, Nelson, do you agree, old man?
Of course I agree. After all, I married her.
How you men do go on. Don't they, Alice?
Let them, dear. It's one of their few pleasures.
I have another pleasure I want to share with you, Alice. Friend?
Yes, Nelson?
Louise's absolute talent with the mandolin.
Oh, Nelson, please.
The mandolin, yes. I seem to remember you played very well, Louise.
Oh, do, Louise, please.
Well, really, I... Well, my talent is so small.
No, oh, we won't take no for an answer, darling. Here it is. Now, what shall your first selection be?
Oh, dear. One of the strings is missing.
Oh,
missing?
Well, I was tuning it yesterday. One of the strings broke, and I didn't get downtown to buy a new one. Oh, I am sorry, truly I am. Perhaps next time you're here.
Too bad. Really too bad. It would have been so nice. Recently married young lady with a gaily beribboned mantle in her lap in a lamp-lit room. It would have been so nice. In fact, as they prepared for sleep, Nelson Carter said just that.
Too bad about your mandolin string, dear. It would have been so nice to hear you play tonight.
Ooh.
What is it, dear?
Oh, the sheets are icy. It must be really cold outside.
Well, Fred Church said it was.
And you are so susceptible to colds. Darling, we've got to have a hot water bottle.
Well, ring for Maisie, why don't you?
Well, she was exhausted, poor dear. She worked so hard cooking and serving dinner. It seems unfair to disturb her.
All right, I'll get it. Do you know where it is?
In the kitchen cabinet, dear. Right in front.
All right. I'd better take a candle.
And use the back stairs, darling. It's shorter that way.
Once again, a young man lights his way through a dark house toward a steep stairway by the flickering flame of a candle. Once again, a young man makes his way along a carpeted hallway, starts a hurried descent of wooden stairs.
Right, Maisie. Your mistress will rest now. I gave her a sedative.
Oh, poor woman. Oh, poor, poor child.
Poor. This will be the second fortune she inherits. Hardly poor.
Two accidents like that. Oh, doctor, it's like the poor girl was accursed.
Aye, it is. Well, things like this happen. As you say, two accidents and so much alike. I shall probably recommend that your mistress builds herself a new house with no cellar and all on one floor.
Whatever for, sir?
No stairs, my girl. No stairs for anyone to fall down and break his neck. Well, I'm on my way. No visitors allowed.
No visitors. And no stairs in a new house. Well, perhaps. Certainly for another year at least the mandolin will be silent. I think that may be counted upon. That and the widow's weeds, and the tearful glances from wide blue eyes. Of course, there was one item that no one counted on.
You sent for me, Inspector.
I did, Peck. What do you think of this?
Anonymous, sir.
Yes. Read it, will you?
Inspector Higley, don't file this letter in the waste paper basket.
Hmm.
I am not writing it without due thought and consideration. I cannot let you have my name as yet. But think of this. Two young men of wealth and standing in the community have died via falls downstairs with broken necks as the consequences. Don't you think at least a perfunctory investigation is called for? Don't you think so? It's signed, An Anxious Friend.
Yes. Well, Sergeant?
Well, someone with an education, wrote it.
Someone who hints he or she will come forward if we find anything. I cannot let you have my name yet.
Yes, I noticed that, sir.
Well, Sergeant, wear your best suit tomorrow. You and I are going calling on a young widow in Oxford Street. I understand she plays the mandolin. Rather well, in fact. Rather well.
Yes, she played rather well. And a string of that mandolin on which she played could be seen today in the Black Museum.
In just a moment, we will continue with the Black Museum starring Orson Welles. And now we continue with The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles.
Two young men dead with broken necks. Both cases certified. Accidental death. And then an anonymous letter. Inspector Higley and Sergeant Peck paid their call. In fact, they paid two calls. The first on Dr. Lipton.
I'm rather glad you dropped in, Inspector. I know there's been whispering. Two unfortunate accidents like this, it would lead to rumors.
Rumors? I see. Such as...
The usual thing, that Stuart Evans and Nelson Carter may have been helped to fall down the stairs.
You mean pushed?
Something of the sort.
And your opinion, Doctor?
My opinion is certified on the death certificate, sir. Accidental deaths, both of them.
I see. Well, thank you, Doctor. I'm glad you're so certain.
Yes, the good doctor appears quite certain. Nonetheless, Inspector Higley and Sergeant Peck made their second visit.
Oh, I'm so glad you came to see me, Inspector.
Thank you. It's not too often that the police are welcome.
No, I suppose not. But, well, I can't help hearing about the things that people are saying. Maisie brings home so many odd tales.
I was wondering, Mrs. Sergeant, interested in music?
Quite a good-looking instrument, ma'am.
I shall never play it again.
Oh, why not?
Both Nelson and Stuart loved the music. I cannot get over the fact that I took a mean excuse and refused to play the night that Nelson died.
Oh, an excuse?
Yes. You see, the churches, Alice and Fred, were here.
I see.
Nelson was pressing me to play. I refused.
Mm-hmm.
I used a missing string as an excuse when I had a stock of strings on hand and could have replaced the missing one. I refused Nelson that last pleasure.
Tell me, do you always keep a stock of mandolin strings on hand, ma'am?
Yes, in the cold weather I do.
I see.
When the temperature drops, the strings seem to get brittle.
Quiet.
They break quite easily.
And where do you buy your mandolin strings, Mrs. Carter?
At Murchison's music shop on the High Street. Oh, Inspector.
Yes?
Sergeant, I appeal to you as men of the world. Can't you help me scotch these dreadful things that people are saying? Can you? Would you? Please.
The inspector and the sergeant said they'd try, and they did. Their business was facts. One fact turned up immediately upon their contact with Mr. Murchison at the music shop on High Street.
He showed me the bill of sale, Inspector.
Uh-huh.
She bought the strings, sent the maid for him with a written order 3 days after this Carter fellow was buried.
Interesting. Now, why would a woman who says she had a stock of strings on hand the night her husband died and says further that she'll never play again buy mandolin strings shortly after the funeral?
An interesting contradiction in dates and actions. A further interesting contradiction came to light some 3 months later.
Another of those anonymous letters, Sergeant. Just, she's playing that mandolin again. I seem to remember, Sergeant, that Mrs. Carter told us she'd never touch the instrument again.
Such contradictory behavior seemed to indicate another call. The inspector dropped in on Louise Evans Carter to her mandolin.
Inspector Higley, how nice. All right, Maisie.
Yes, madam.
Inspector, my friend Clifford West.
How do you do?
Inspector, I'm afraid you've caught me in a fib. Is that very bad?
A fib? Well, it couldn't be bad. Not from you, Louise.
I don't quite follow, Mrs. Carter.
I told you some time ago I'd never play my mandolin again. And you've heard me playing.
Yes, so you did. And so I have. But there must be a good reason, I assume.
Oh, but there is. You tell him, Clifford, dear.
Well, as it happens, so we are both very, very happy. And music seemed extremely apropos. You see, sir, Mrs. Carter, Louise, has just done me the honor to consent to be my wife.
Number three. The inspector sensed the tension in Midhaven. He waited. All of Midhaven seemed to be waiting with him. The first action came from an unexpected quarter.
Inspector Higley, I demand you trace this letter for me at once.
May I see your letter, sir?
Here.
I see. Mr. West, two men have died with broken necks. Are you the third? Are you entering the den of the tigress? Tracing a letter like this is not the easiest.
There was no question in the inspector's mind that the author of Clifford West's letter was the same party who had written the two notes addressed to the inspector himself. A brief comparison of the handwriting removed what little doubt the inspector had. And Sergeant Peck dropped in on the small Midhaven post office.
This your postmark?
That's right, sir. Of course it is.
Ever see this envelope before?
Well, maybe. Maybe not. Seen hundreds like it. You can buy that cheap kind in any stationery shop in Midhaven.
Blank, Inspector. Nothing.
I expected as much.
Do you think that West fellow will be scared off, sir?
I doubt it. Sergeant, take this copy over to the Midhaven Gazette, will you? I want it run in every edition for a week.
Think you'll get an answer, sir?
Well, remember the first letter. I cannot let you have my name as yet. Perhaps the party concerned will feel now is the time to reveal himself or herself, as the case may be. That promise of absolute privacy may do the trick.
I saw your advertisement, Inspector. I came. I hope you can protect me if I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I sincerely do hope so.
Your confidence will be respected, Mrs. Church.
Thank you, sir. I trust you don't feel there's any jealousy involved of any kind.
My job is facts, ma'am. Do you have any?
I don't know. You see, Stuart and Nelson both were young men of whom my husband and I were very fond. And I remember so distinctly how disturbed Louise seemed when we asked her to play that night. She seemed upset over our discovery of the missing string on that mandolin. I guess that's all, Inspector.
It's not very much, is it?
No. No, it's not. But it seems so peculiar. And the mandolin. Always that mandolin. Inspector, how could a mandolin be used to kill anyone?
I don't know yet, even if anyone was killed. However, I'd like to find out. Mrs. Church, have you any idea of Mrs. Carter's social engagements? I mean, when, for instance, is she probably out of her house for a length of time? You can advise us as to any such matter.
It seems Mrs. Carter attended the ladies' auxiliary of the local church each Wednesday afternoon, an activity a respectable young widow would be expected to enjoy. And it was Wednesday afternoon when the inspector and the sergeant called.
The mistress isn't in, sir.
I doubt if she'll be too long. May we wait?
If you wish to, sir.
The inspector went into the sitting room. Sergeant drifted toward the kitchen. Maisie, safely occupied by the good sergeant, Inspector Higley, swiftly found the cellar stairs. Carefully he moved down, examining each step, each lift and tread, each section of the baseboard. Halfway down.
Well, interesting to say the least.
Upstairs and out of the back stairway. Again, the careful examination. Again, about halfway down.
They'll do it every time, every single time.
Then, quietly into the kitchen.
Sergeant?
Yes, sir?
I don't think we'll wait any longer.
I'm sorry, sir. The mistress went along to the vestry and she ought to be...
Oh, that's all right. Just tell her we called, will you? Come along, Sergeant. We'll drop back another time.
And the two policemen left the house to return to the inspector's office.
It's something, Sergeant. Not much, but something.
It convinces me, sir.
And me. But how about a jury?
I don't know, sir. Of course, if we had a bit more, the nails themselves, sir, and then,
yes.
And then there's the business of buying that stock of mandolin strings.
Sergeant, we'll drop in on Mrs. Carter this evening. Do you by any chance play the mandolin?
It was nice of you to come back so soon, Inspector. I do hope you've been able to help me with all that mean whispering I told you about.
I wish we could, ma'am. I wish we could. Did I tell you that Sergeant Peck is interested in the mandolin?
Why, no, you didn't.
May I, ma'am?
Oh, certainly.
Yes, lovely tone, ma'am.
Yes, it has.
Quite a romantic instrument, I believe.
It goes back to the troubadours in France, centuries ago.
Yes, I've heard. It certainly had its place in your life, Mrs. Carter.
Yes, I dare say it has.
I've been wondering about something, Mrs. Carter. I hope you can help me.
Well, if I can, I will, of course.
We checked with Mr. Murchison at his music shop.
Oh?
Yes, he tells us you purchased a stock of strings shortly after Mr. Carter's death, not just before, as you told us.
Well, then I'd forgotten the exact date.
It seems rather peculiar that you should forget that after you made such a point of it to us.
Well, I was under a terrible strain. I'm sure... If you'd stop
plucking that A-string, Sergeant. My nerves are...
I'm sorry, ma'am. I didn't mean to break it. I'll get you a new one.
That won't be necessary, Sergeant. I have extras right here in this drawer. That was the A-string, wasn't it?
I'm rather surprised, Mrs. Carter. A woman of your obvious means keeping nails, and bent ones at that, in a drawer of a desk in her sitting room.
I forgot to throw them away.
Yes, I dare say you did. May I have them, please?
Don't leave them alone.
I dare say also that they'll fit exactly into certain holes in the baseboards of your cellar and back stairs, just above the steps where someone unsuspecting would trip over tightly stretched mandolin strings stretched between two nails, like these, Mrs. Carter. I'm taken in charge, madam. The charge is willful murder of your two husbands. I must warn you that anything you may say may be taken down in...
And so, once and for all, the mandolin string was silenced. It can be seen today in the Black Museum.
Orson Welles will be back with you in just a moment. In person is Orson Welles.
Louise Evans Mason Carter was tried for murder. The police stated facts and produced evidence. But Louise wept and lifted those blue eyes of hers to heaven, and the jury disagreed, and she was not convicted. Not in court. She was convicted by her neighbors and by her friends. They knew. And so, Louise Evans Mason Carter moved away, far north, to Scotland, alone. And there she died some 20 years later, still alone. And now, until next time, do we meet in the same place and I tell you another story of the Black Museum, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
Black Museum, starring Orson Welles, is presented by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Radio Attractions. The program is written by Ara Marion, with original music composed and conducted by Sidney Torch. Produced by Harry Allen Towers.